Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You are listening to Let's Weekend. I'm your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Yeah. So it's January 10th, 2020.
We're not dead
World
yet.
World War III may have been averted.
For now.
So far, at least. I'm guessing cooler heads prevailed at some point.
None of them being Trump's.
Yeah. But obviously things are still kind of iffy, and we're probably going to be walking on the proverbial eggshells for the next couple of weeks. So, yeah. You know, just prepare yourself for that. But so far, it looks like things have cooled down for now. But obviously, although that was the primary main story of the previous week, we did have some other stuff that happened. We got some Brexit updates. Another person in the Democratic primary has dropped out, and it's the one that honestly probably should have dropped out a lot sooner than she did. But
person is the right way to describe them.
You remember the whole thing that happened in D.C.? I think it was last year or the year before, where those bunch of little rich shits from Covington were at the pro-life rally, the March for Life rally in D.C.
Yeah.
And there was that tussle between them and the Black Israelites and a group of Native American activists.
Yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got some updates on that. You're not going to like them, but we got them. And probably the saddest of all, one of the greatest drummers in rock and roll history passed away. I think it was it last night?
Tuesday.
It was Tuesday, and the news only just got out,
yeah.
I think, today. We'll be talking about all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, with all that said and done, let's start as we always do. Phil, what have you been doing this week?
So I've finally gone 4K. I figured I was due for a TV upgrade at some point. The last time I bought a new TV was 2009.
Mm.
So, and it's really interesting because this $300 TV I bought has a better picture than the one I spent $1,000 on back then.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's like, hey, that's not gray. That's actually black. I didn't know that was possible. And it's got, you know, HDR, so it's not the, like, greatest panel as far as brightness goes, so it can't get really, really bright, but it does get some of the point across. And yeah, I've been really enjoying it. Tetris Effect is... Tetris Effect with HDR is a trip. Yeah, so I've been really, really enjoying that. Went back and played a bit more Mortal Kombat 11, see what that looked like in 4K HDR. And
we'll have to get some matches in.
Yeah, you know, we'll have to do that before my PS Plus expires. So,
oh shit.
Yeah, because I don't think I'm going to renew unless, well, I do plan to buy like the upgrade kit for Street Fighter V, but no, actually, that won't be a problem. I think I'll just end up buying it on PC and just playing there anyway because it's cross-play. I really enjoy this little TV. My only like gripe is that I got the 4 Series, which has one omission, which I kind of wish I had known about before I bought it. Doesn't have VESA mount. And I had bought a pedestal stand that uses VESA mount, so I can't attach it. So that's a bit of a bummer, but so I'm stuck with the little stupid, you know, triangle feet that these companies are doing now because apparently pedestals are too expensive to make. But I'll figure
that's
something out.
Because you want your money.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, TCL makes very nice TVs. For the price that I paid, I'm very happy with the image. The Roku integration is great. It's not slow, which is something I was kind of worried about. It's like, you know, these smart OS things that ship with TVs, usually pretty shitty. But that's
hardware minimum.
Yeah, but that's really not been the case with the Roku. I've been using YouTube on it, Disney Plus on it. That runs fine. Netflix, all that. It's all really good, really snappy. I think for the price, I can't really go wrong with it. So,
hell yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of been it for me. How about you, Pat?
Well, I finally started my NHL expansion project. Got 7 videos out now with more coming this weekend. Every video containing a single game in the schedule. So they come in at about an hour apiece. So I'm really happy with how consistent they've been to that end. And, yeah, 7 games into the season, I think the team that I've assembled is starting to gel pretty well. And I think I've got a competitive roster out there. That's about all I've got right now. apart from that, I'm just tired as shit because insomnia is a thing. Apparently.
It's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
And I'm developing techniques for dealing with it, but those techniques are not bulletproof. So sometimes shit just happens.
It does. You just got to roll through the day the best you can.
Yep.
So if I pass out, you'll know why.
Yeah, I used to have problems with insomnia too. Then I found out that my local Kroger sells a generic form of Tylenol PM.
Well, there you go.
And haven't had that problem since.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've heard like a lot of people say that microdosing shrooms about 3 or 4 times a year keeps their insomnia problems completely at bay.
It probably does.
Yeah.
All right. So, Teresa, what about you?
I've been playing Pokemon Sword, pretty close to finishing, but then never finishing because they announced 200 more Pokemon.
The expansions are coming.
Oh, yeah. They're coming, all right. So playing that, watching Mandalorian, and shopping for accessories that you can now have and use legally in Illinois.
Hell yeah.
Yep. No more incinerating. Let's vape it. That's really about it, other than working, which is taking up an inordinate amount of time. 40 hours is a lot.
Yeah.
It's funny how that works.
That's all.
All right, Chris, what about you?
This has been just a busy week for me, so I haven't done too much outside of doing some streaming and some other things. The weather has been crazy all week. We had a series of snow squalls on, I think it was Wednesday, which basically meant for about 30 to 45 minutes, about every other hour, you just had tons of snow dropping onto the ground. To the kind of crazy extent of if you just stood in the snow, stood out for like a minute or two, you were just covered in snow.
Oh my God.
That kind of fun. Because then you see people still walking around in shorts, and you're like, what the fuck are you people doing? that was real fun, but that was basically like 3 of those, and it was done. But still. Kind of having that much. It wasn't all that much snow in the end because it started melting pretty quickly afterwards. But yeah, like yesterday, I think it was wind chill was 8 degrees in the morning. Then by the time I left around 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, it was about 40 out. So today I think it's in the 50s, and tomorrow's in the 60s. And it's raining all day.
Just wait.
I think it's gonna be dropping back again, but. It just can't stay steady in any way, which I guess is probably more the big result you get from climate change than anything is just no consistency, even here with our lake effect weather where it changes anyway. But I can go out tomorrow in shorts if I want to not be too crazy, and it It'll be the 11th of January. That's not normal.
It is not normal. It's just wrong.
Yeah.
They gotta fix this shit.
Well, it's not going too well in Australia. But yeah, this week has just been crazy on that part alone. But yeah, I've been streaming a lot this week. Let's see, I streamed Dicey Dungeons on Saturday, which is the new Terry Cavanaugh game.
Yep.
And it has some great art and music from Outsiders. I think Chipsel does the music, which is really well done. The art is, I forget who the artist is. It's somebody does some really good work, but it's essentially like a roguelite game. And as you can tell from the dice, the title involves dice. Especially, it's kind of like if you adapted Yahtzee for a roguelite RPG kind of thing, where your attacks are basically, you have different moves you get, pick up as you go through, or you can buy that kind of stuff, and that'll be things like, oh, you put the dice you put in here is the number of damage you do to the enemy, or there'll be lots of different kinds of stuff. There's elemental buffs, debuffs you can do, poison, a bunch of other stuff, and some things like shock, which will effectively disable one of their attack modules for the enemy, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of ways of playing around with that stuff that is really well done. And on top of that, there are 6 classes. I have 5 unlocked, and they all play completely differently from each other. Like you have Warrior as your base, kind of bland class. The Thief is more debuff-oriented, where I had at my first run, it was basically all poison-based damage I was doing, which you kind of build up poison on the enemy, and that's how much you have there is how much damage they take when they start their new turn, that kind of thing. So I had essentially the ability to add poison damage to them like multiple times, and so like my special essentially just gave me a bunch of one dice, I think 4 of them. So it's like just a way of just building up that stuff pretty quickly. And I think by the end I had another one that just allowed me to double whatever they had if I were to put enough dice in it, that kind of thing. There's a robot class that is really, really different because it's basically you generating dice, working towards this like jackpot mechanic. But if you go over it, it cancels out all the attacks if you haven't used them yet. So you can kind of really screw yourself over if you're gambling a little too much with that. And then they all just change out how you approach each one. And the way they kind of do progression is there are 6 episodes of each. And the first one's just basically, you know, just get through this. And then they start layering on additional handicaps that you have to deal with. I think the second episode for the Warrior I was playing, you just have a curse on at all times, which means one of your attacks that you have potentially will just be cursed and not happen. So you lose the dice and the attack and all that. And so sometimes it was when I was trying to heal myself and that kind of thing. It's a really devious game, but it's really well done. I've been playing it off and on for most of the week, and it's really well done for that. You can kind of save whenever you want when you back out. And so it makes it really nice to be jump in for like 10 minutes. All right, I'll come back later, that kind of thing. Or sometimes you just have runs. I think I started the second one for the Thief, and I died on the second run, the second fight. It's like, well, that was fucked. I'll come back another time and try this a little bit more seriously, kind of thing. For the second stream I did on Sunday and Tuesday, I started playing Bayonetta. I got the Switch version a while ago, only played a couple hours of it. So I wanted to go back to it because Sunday was the 10th anniversary of the game's release.
Yep.
Here in North America, so I was going to play it again. And quickly realized how stupid the cutscenes are.
Oh, yeah.
Not really in a negative way. They just keep going on and on and on.
Yeah.
And the entertaining bits is pretty few. It's like when in the initial ones, like it's when the Joe Pesci character is on and he's just constantly cursing. You're like, all right, that guy's pretty good. The rest of it's like religious bullshit stuff they're doing here with demons and angels and all this. It's like there's not too much interesting except when, well, even then it's like the obvious like parts of the cutscenes where they like, here, we're going to swing around her ass to make sure you see that. Mm-hmm. And I was playing with all the Nintendo characters. So when you're on Peach or Daisy, who have mini skirts on, it's like, oh, this is obvious what this is doing. Mm-hmm. And when you're in Link or Samus, it's much less distracting in that way.
Because mm-hmm.
they're fully clothed and they don't lose that. Even when like the demon stuff, the hair demon stuff that's coming out, it's like she doesn't go scantily clad for that in those forms. So I've been just playing through it. I think by the end of the second stream, I was like 7 chapters in, which is about halfway through the game. Mm-hmm. So it's not too bad. I do want to keep going back to it. But yeah, it took me until near the end of that second stream for me to really get the hang of the combat.
Oh, yeah. That game is... For even for people who have experience with that game, getting used to the combat is...
Especially getting the timing of the dodges.
Yeah.
Right, because the ability for you to get health back just from stuff in the environment is pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're just using items, in which the game seems to be suggesting, like, don't use items, because you'll get bonus points for not doing that. Mm. I'm getting to the point where I'm just going to stop caring about that and just use them instead of saving them up or... whatever, because the first run here, you know, I have like the least amount of moves and all that kind of stuff to really work with. But now I've gotten some of the moves to use, like the down the down kick. So you're near, you can kind of do a downward kick onto enemies and stuff like that. Some good moves to deal with groups and all that. That are a bit tough early on when you just have like the basic set of attacks and. Yeah, trying to get the cameras are bad. It's just really bad, the camera. I turned down the sensitivity just because it was so fast and loose. It was kind of hard to get the handle on the action that was going on around me. And even the lock-on isn't great either. So it's a bit of a hard game to go back to, especially when I didn't really play it back then. And I mentioned on the stream, like, I'm more of a God of War person when it comes to the different types of action games out there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like God of War, Ninja Gaiden, DMC. And Bayonetta is very much in the DMC vein. Which I'm fine with, but it's just I'm not... My skills aren't tuned for that kind of combat engine. I kind of like the way that God of War just has you flick the stick to dodge out of the way. That kind of thing. Since you're not managing camera at all there. But yeah, that game is at least pretty good. So far, and they're going to be doing that remaster for PS4 and Xbox One next month. So it'll miss the 10th anniversary just by a little bit. But on Thursday, yesterday, I streamed Goner, which is on sale for $3 on the eShop. And it's a really well done roguelite. Has a nice 2D art style to it.
Mm-hmm.
Not really too complex in the way it works, but it's one of those games where your head, depending on what kind of head you have attached, you have different amounts of health.
Mm-hmm.
There are different kinds of weapons. So far, I just have a pistol or a shotgun I can equip at the start of a run. And there are different backpacks that give you like extra abilities. Like one replenishes your ammo. Another one gives you like a special attack where you just furiously taking shots in front of you. And the other one is this ball that gives you like a big jump. And I sort of got to the point where I could beat the first world mostly well enough. Because at the end, you get this just big room that you're fighting a ton of enemies at, and especially these three big dudes that I think if they hit you at all, you lose all your items. Like whenever you get hit, you generally lose your head, your weapon, and your backpack item. You got to go pick them back up. Because as a body, you have no health. So the first hit you get with that, you die. So sometimes where I just got hit, knocked off my stuff, managed to hit something else on the way over to my items, that kind of thing. But I also found out there was a way to... I accidentally threw my gun away and then went to the next level. It's like, all right, now I no longer have a weapon. And eventually it gives you another gun back, but it's a pretty neat little roguelite on the Switch that is... $3 right now. They're pretty good. They got a big New Year's sale going on right now, so there's a bunch of stuff on sale. And that was one of the games I was like, this is a game that nobody really talks about that I kind of want to play and show off for people to check out. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. And I'm just continuing to play Rocket League. I finished up the getting all the items from the Frosty Fest before it ended on Monday, I think it was. And then been doing playing a bunch after that, which the new challenge has required me to play some of the crap, the mode that has all the power-ups in. That's just really weird, but and I just don't like it because it's just complete chaos most of the time, because anybody could have any power up at any time, just cause everything to go nuts. That's one of the modes I had to play. So I played a few, and I realized they put all the – they used to have these weird maps in the game, had different geometry and all that, and that is in that mode now. Instead of being – they used to have a separate Rocket League Labs playlist for people who just want to play with these like experimental maps. Now they're just in the most chaotic mode of them all, so it's kind of a weird thing to see some of those maps in. But yeah, the game's still really good. Look forward to put some more time into that over this new year. The new Rocket Pass keeps going, and that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
All right, yeah. So amongst other things, I have, you know, because The Witcher 3 Complete Edition was you know, it was on sale for like $15. I have that on my PS4, and I've been doing the expansions. I'm doing Blood and Wine right now. And the funny thing about Blood and Wine is that it's almost a game in and of itself. Like, it takes place completely outside of the regular area where the base game takes place in. The atmosphere is completely different. There's a bunch of new characters. It is just it's pretty much a game on its own. And it basically takes place in this place called Toussaint, which is a Nilfgaardian duchy that exists far away from the warfare that's happening. So it's very pastoral and picturesque, and it's basically fucking Camelot. There's like all this stuff about, you know, knights, and, you know, they have their traditions they have to adhere to, and there's like all ritual, and, you know, it's like out of a bad chivalric romance, you know, it's, and then, suddenly a vampire appears and it starts killing, some of the rich dukes in Toussaint. And so that's kind of where Geralt comes in. He is specifically requested by the Duchess of Toussaint, Anna Henrietta. If you've read the books, you'll probably remember Anna Henrietta as this spoiled sort of woman child who constantly wants to get her way but won't. She's a lot more mature at this point when you encounter her, but it's still there. And it's just like this whole part of the game like really doubles down on like the fairy tales type stuff. Like, there's a part where you actually climb up the beanstalk to kill the giant. You know, stuff like that. But it's a lot of fun. It's definitely good. Other than that, I've been playing more of Doom 2016 because it's Doom 2016, and it's fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
You
probably even picking up Eternal when that comes out at some point.
Probably. More than likely.
Yeah.
Yes, I will.
I didn't see the Doom ports they put out last year. They got updated with mod support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so you can add a sigil to them.
Yeah,
some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so it was, I think 60 FPS support,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty neat.
Mm. And also, I went to GameStop today and I paid off the last bit of my pre-order for Cyberpunk. So, yeah. That was when I actually, like, found out, like, all the stuff you're going to be getting when you get that game. Because, like, okay, so, like, this is what the game comes with. Like, okay, so, like, these are the physical items that come with it. So you've got the case with the game disc, yeah. There's stickers. You got the map of Night City. There's also postcards from Night City. There's also the World Compendium detailing the game's setting and lore.
Which is kind of important.
Yeah. But that's just the physical, because there's also some digital stuff you get, too. You get the game soundtrack. You get an art book featuring a selection of concept art from the game. You get wallpapers for both desktop and mobile. And you get a digital copy of the Cyberpunk 2020 source book.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. So that's cool. That's some cool shit right there. All right. Other than that, week was pretty uneventful. I had to go frickin' haul off the trash again. As I have to often remind listeners of the show who may be new and have not heard me talk about this before, we do not have trash service out where I live. So I have to borrow my dad's truck and his trailer and physically load the cans onto the trailer, drive down the road to the dump, and then physically dispose of the trash myself by hand.
Well, you're like a few steps above the people in Kentucky. They would dump it in their pond in the back 40. Wish I was fucking kidding, man. Yep.
But, let's see. Other than that, weather, winter is very, winter isn't here. Let me just put it that way. I mean, technically it's winter, but I mean, it's been getting to like the 60s and like, you know, early next week is going to get up into the mid 70s. Back, we're supposed to have chance of severe weather tomorrow. So if I'm not on the on day zero tomorrow, you'll know why. Last but not least, I guess I've brought this up on occasion. You guys know I've been studying to become a medical coder. Well, you know, I passed, like, my exam with Career Step, preparation exam. Well, I now know when my actual state exam for my certification is. It's going to be on the 31st at 10:15 a.m. And
that's not a lot of notice.
Well, I mean, I knew it was going to be in January.
Oh,
I just didn't know when, because they only give this this test out a couple times every quarter. It's going to be a written test, which is going to be difficult because the thing I did with Career Step was all digital, and that sure as hell was difficult. But it's fine. It's fine. It's what I've been training up to this whole point. So, So I think that's it. We got anything we want to add before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And tonight, we're going to talk about a certain individual. A gentleman by the name of Carl Tanzler. Here's a picture of him. And he's not, if you look at him and you look at him, he's like, yeah, that's not really, like, he looks like a Sigmund Freud lookalike, you know? He's very normal. He was very normal if it weren't for one little thing that we're going to talk about. And this is fucking weird. So prepare yourselves. Okay. So before I tell you about what Carl Tanzler did, you need to know a little bit about his backstory. By profession, he was a radiologist. He worked at the Marine Hospital Service in Key West, Florida. He was originally born in Germany, as you can probably tell from his name. sometime before World War One, he left Germany and made his way to Australia because he wanted to, I guess, find some kind of economic opportunities there. Unfortunately, he got there right around the time that World War One started. So the British authorities ended up putting him into a concentration camp for quote unquote safety reasons, you know, until the war was over. Eventually he was taken over to Trial Bay, to a prison that was located on one of the cliffs there. Apparently he was planning to escape by secretly building a sailboat. But eventually he was just let go because, you know, the war ended, so whatever. So he went around from there. He made his way to the U.S. around 1926. Originally he stopped off in Havana, Cuba. Then he made his way to Florida. And eventually he took up his profession as a radiologist at the U.S. Marine Hospital, using the then name Carl von Kossel. Okay, now here's where the weird part, where the weird shit starts, okay? So, according to Tanzler, he claimed that back when he was still a child in Germany, he claimed that during the nights he would be visited by a vision of what he claimed was a dead ancestor by the name of Countess Anna Constantina von Kossel, who supposedly revealed to him the face of who would become his true love, as he said, an exotic, dark-haired woman. Okay, you got that? Now keep that in the back of your mind for what I'm about to tell you. So, in 1930, while he was working at the Marine Hospital, he had a patient come in, a young woman by the name of Maria Elena Milagro de Hoyos, who was a Cuban-American woman who was brought in by her mother because she had been sort of short of breath. And when she brought her in, Hoyos decided to, you know, inspect her, you know, find out what it was that was happening. And it turned out that she was suffering from tuberculosis.
Mm.
Now, remember, this is 1930. So tuberculosis was still typically considered fatal at the time. In fact, Dr. Tanzler got a hold of her, she had pretty much all of her immediate family, except her mother, had died from the disease.
Oh, God.
And Tanzler saw the woman, and saw Miss De Hoyos, and was like, holy shit, that's the fucking woman from my vision. And so he became just a wee bit obsessed with her. He attempted to cure Hoyos with a variety of medicines, as well as x-rays and electrical equipment that he brought to her home. He also showered her with gifts of jewelry and clothing, apparently even professed his love to her at one point, although there's really no evidence that may have actually happened, or that Hoyos herself even liked him all that much. So, unfortunately, as is what typically happened with people who get tuberculosis at that time, she passed away the next year.
Mm.
Tanzler, as you can expect, was distraught. He paid for her funeral. He even commissioned an above-ground mausoleum in the Key West Cemetery that he could give her, that they buried her in. And he would visit it almost every night for the next 2 years. And then in 1933, in the month of April, he crept into the cemetery and dug up her body. Well, actually, I say dug up her body. It was in a mausoleum, so it wasn't so much he...
But, yeah.
Yeah. And then he carted her home on a toy wagon that he had under the cover of darkness. He then, when he brought the corpse home, he then attached the bones back together with wire and coat hangers. He fitted the face with glass eyes. As the skin, of course, would eventually decompose, he would then replace it with silk cloth soaked in wax and plaster of Paris. As her hair fell out from the decomposing scalp, he fashioned a wig from hair that had been collected by her mother and given to Tansler not long after her burial. He then filled the corpse's abdominal and chest cavity with rags to keep the original form. He dressed her remains in stockings, jewelry, and gloves, and he kept the body in his bed. He also used copious amounts of perfume, disinfectants, preserving agents, and to both mask the odor of decomposition and to forestall the effects of decomposition.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept doing this for 7 years. Finally, in 1940, one of Hoyos' surviving sisters had been hearing rumors going around Key West that Tansler had been keeping her body in his home. Her name was Florinda, by the way, and she contacted the local police, especially once she found out that she went actually to the mausoleum and realized it was empty. And the police went over, they found Tansler, and they found what was Hoyos' body.
Oh, we're gonna wow. Yep.
There it is. That was photographed by the police in 1940. That's basically what she looked like by that point. As you can know, she's pretty much nothing but plaster at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as you can expect, Tansler was arrested. He was detained. They examined him by a psychiatrist. He was found mentally competent to stand trial on the charge of, quote, wantonly and maliciously destroying a grave and removing a body without authorization. He was then held to answer on his charge on October 9th. And here's the thing, though. The case was eventually dropped, and he was released as the statute of limitations for the crime had expired.
Okay.
Yeah. Here's a little paragraph here towards the end of the from the Wikipedia article on this guy. Though not reported contemporaneously, research has revealed evidence of Tansler's necrophilia with her corpse.
Yeah, maybe that was going to happen. Yeah.
Two physicians, Dr. DePue and Dr. Foraker, who attended the autopsy of Hoyos' remains, recalled in a 1972 interview that a paper tube had been inserted into the vaginal area of the corpse that allowed for intercourse. Others contend that since no evidence of necrophilia was presented at the 1940 preliminary hearing, and because the physician's proof surfaced in 1972, over 30 years after the case had been dismissed, the necrophilia allegation is questionable. While no existing contemporary photographs of the autopsy or photographs taken at the public display show a tube, the necrophilia claim was repeated by the HBO autopsy program in 1999.
Alrighty then.
So you're probably wondering what happened to this dude. He in 1944 he ended up moving to Pasco County, Florida, where he ended up writing an autobiography that ended up being serialized in the pulp magazine Fantastic Adventures in 1947. His home was near his ex-wife Doris. Did I mention that he was married right around the time all this happened?
I probably
should have brought that up. she apparently helped to support Tansler in his later years. He finally received official United States citizenship in 1950 in Tampa. He was separated from his obsession, but the obsession never went away. He actually used a death mask to create a life-size effigy of Hoyos, and he lived with it until his death at the age of 75 in 1952. His body was discovered on the floor of his home 3 weeks after his death.
Ew.
It has been recounted that Tansler was found in the arms of the Hoyos effigy under discovery of his corpse, but his obituary reported that he died on the floor behind one of his organs. By organs, we mean...
Musical?
The musical one.
Yeah. The obituary recounted, quote, a metal cylinder on a shelf above a table, and it wrapped in silken cloth and a robe was a waxen image. It has been written, most notably by Dr. Swisegood, that Tansler had the body switched, written, not proved, but written, that Tansler had the body switched, or that Hoyos' remains were secretly returned with him, and that he died with the real body of Hoyos. That's just a rumor. It's never been proven.
Yeah, it's likely not true.
Yeah. And that was the story of Carl Tansler.
Some people don't know how to let go.
Yeah.
Messed up.
Oh, yeah. And it's pretty, and it's all true, too. So
messed up.
The best type of fucked up shit is the fucked up shit that actually happened. Mm. And that has been another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. All right. So, with that out of the way, it is now time to start the show proper. And as always, with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our assholes of the week are the people at College Humor. Well, specifically the parent company of College Humor. Who, after the, wait, were they the ones who sold College Humor, or did they buy College Humor?
They sold it.
Yeah, okay, so the parent company that sold College Humor also laid off over 100 people during the sale. So, fuck those people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is a weird whole situation because, essentially, a large part of the issue here is also Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Because a while ago, Facebook essentially started inflating their video views numbers by crazy amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And draw people like College Humor and other groups to go Facebook exclusive with their content.
Mm-hmm.
Who then eventually found out, oh yeah, that was all lies. You're not actually getting the amount of traffic that you thought you were, and that kind of created a big hole in their budgets. Essentially, like, oh, you're not actually getting the deserving of the money that people thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. So this was a whole thing with the parent company, IAC, having to sell the company to sort of mitigate their losses. At that point, since the whole thing kind of dropped enough to a certain point where it couldn't support that many people. So I laid off pretty much everybody but like 5 to 10 people. Mm-hmm. And sold it to Sam Reich, who's the chief creative officer. Mm-hmm. And longtime executive for the company. Ended up taking it on himself. Was going to sort of keep going with it for what they have. Basically had to give out like a really unfortunate tweet saying, so bad news with a twist. IAC, our parent company, has made the difficult decision to no longer finance us. 100 plus brilliant people lost their jobs, some of whom are dear, dear friends, hire them. The twist, however, is that IAC has agreed to let me run with the company myself. In words that I'm sure are as surreal to read as they are to type, I will soon become the new majority owner of CH Media. Yeah, they started in 99. Became one of the big forces in humor on the internet.
Mm-hmm. In fact, actually, now to think about it, for a little while, College Humor was like the bane of the internet. Because yeah. They basically were like the new E-bombs world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, wow, there's a throwback. Fucking E-bombs world. But yeah, College Humor basically were accused of like stealing a bunch of content, much like E-bombs world was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they turned it around and turned awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a redemption story.
And Sam Reich also said, while we were on the way to becoming profitable, we were nonetheless losing money, and I myself have no money to be able to lose. Said he was the best choice to acquire CH Media to find its next chapter. The business places, or decision places, CH Media with an owner who's blown by fans, passionate about the business, sees a future we believe in, said an IAC spokesperson. But yeah, they are, let's see, they have their own streaming service, Dropout, mm-hmm. that they say that people should definitely subscribe to support what's left of the team, because they still have about 6 months worth of content still to release. So that definitely seems like a way to support the people who just got laid off by, you know, helping to support the content they made, and hopefully they'll get paid for that.
Yeah.
I don't know what the financial details of the severance packages will be for this, but yeah, fortunately a lot of people losing their jobs. But hopefully the new form of the company can kind of keep going and maybe get to the point where they can get those people back.
Yeah. In other news, E-Bomb World still exists.
Kind of. In name only. Yeah. But yeah, they do technically still exist. And that reminds me, I'm probably going to have to do a random factoid on them one day, because that is a... that's a relic of a very specific time in internet meme culture.
Mm-hmm.
One that every day I desperately wish we could go back to. Because... I would take another dozen years of the Sponge Monkeys if it meant I didn't have to deal with the shit on YouTube right now.
Yeah.
YouTube's a dumpster fire.
Oh, YouTube's always been a dumpster fire. It's just that the nature of the dumpster fire has changed from stupid shit and people who want to kill all of the Jews.
Hmm. It's become a very loud dumpster fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're slowly shrinking, but that's another story.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, those are our assholes of the week. And now for our hero, well, we sort of put this in quotes, hero of the week. And we say this not because of what this guy did necessarily, but because he actually owned up to it and is actually taking responsibility for his actions.
Sort of.
Sort of, yeah. California Representative Duncan Hunter. Some of you may have heard back last month, early December, he ended up pleading guilty to a felony involving campaign spending.
Mm-hmm.
And he announced he is actually going to resign on Monday.
Yeah.
Isn't this the guy that bought like a whole bunch of Steam games?
He used it to buy
stuff like that, as well as fun vacations, groceries, affairs, extramarital affairs, and a bunch of other stuff. And so, yeah, part of the reason he did not resign quickly after pleading guilty to that felony on December 3rd is because it gets him another paycheck and extends the amount of money he gets off of the federal pension. You know.
Okay, that's asshole behavior there.
Yep. So yeah, beyond just what the specific offenses he has done so far, the hero part of it is just him finally giving up and letting the voters in that specific area be able to pick somebody new.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's not as much of a dumbass as this guy.
Yeah.
As you can tell, it was very slow as far as heroes of the week goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rough week for that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and speaking of heroes, here we go. Rest in peace, Neil Peart. Yeah. One of the greatest drummers in rock and roll history. One of the greatest drummers who ever lived, period.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't just put him just in rock and roll. I'd put him up there with like the likes of like Buddy Rich. He was that good. Neil Peart was the longtime drummer, and by longtime I mean he was basically there from their third album onward.
Yeah.
And he pretty much redefined that whole band when he came in.
Yeah.
Up until that point, when it was Geddy Lee, Alex Lifeson, you know, that's the with Neil Peart, that's the main trio that did that was Rush to basically everyone. The first two albums, they were basically kind of like a Cream / Led Zeppelin deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came in and completely fucking changed everything.
Yeah.
Neil was not just the drummer for Rush. He was also the lyricist. And his lyrics are probably the most celebrated and yet also the most divisive contribution he did to Rush, because, you know, Pert's lyrics were very whimsical. It's either you can consider them either intelligent or pretentious. It really depends on how you see it. And, you know, like, take, for example, probably Rush's most famous song, which is Tom Sawyer. You know, that's, like, a really good example. It's a very, you know, it's the whole idea is of, like, a person who, like, lives by their own rules and everything. But in the hands of a lyricist like Neil Peart, it turns into kind of silly and yet kind of deep at the same time.
Yeah. He had that talent for,
Yeah. Obviously, not all of them were winners, like Ty Shan, for example,
uh-huh.
which also happens to be their least favorite song to play live, apparently.
Yeah, I don't think they even play it anymore.
Yeah, well, I think they actually stopped playing it altogether by 1990.
Yeah.
And on top, also as far as his drumming is concerned, obviously, like, his playing by itself was amazing. This dude was able to, well, just, like, listen to that song Big Money. That opening, those opening fills that he does when the song starts, you realize that's not like pre-programmed or anything. That's just one dude and his kit.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's no drum machines of any kind. And it's because of the fact that he didn't use those is that pretty much by the late 80s, he had to climb into his drum kit instead of behind it because his drum kit actually got so ridiculously big and varied that it was basically a complete 360.
Yeah, pretty much.
In fact, hell, I'll show it right now. This is one of the drum kits he had back in, let's see, this is 1987. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, just look at that. All of that. That's all him.
Yeah, he plays all of that.
Yeah.
Well, he did.
He did. Hmm. On top of that, since, you know, Neil Peart was also their lyricist, he was also a somewhat prolific author as well. He wrote several essays and a lot of travel books as well, which is something he'd been doing since the early 70s.
Hmm.
And he was also the guy who came up with the storyline for Clockwork Angels, which was a Latter-day Rush concept album.
Yeah.
And a pretty good one, apparently.
That was also expanded upon into a series of novels that he co-wrote with Kevin J. Anderson.
Yep, that's right. So he actually has a library of fiction as well, even though it is rather small compared to the rest of his work. So apparently, Neil Peart had been battling cancer for the last 3 years.
Yep, brain cancer.
Brain cancer, which suddenly makes me realize why he was wearing those head wraps all the time.
Because
It would seem that he was probably getting chemo.
Yeah.
And radiation.
Yeah.
So he was 67 years old. It is really sad to see him go like that. I will say at least that, you know, Rush had already retired now. This was, they had retired from performing live. The band was pretty much, you know, because they had accomplished everything they wanted to accomplish and they just wanted to go on with their lives. So, you know, fortunately this wasn't like in the middle of a tour, in the middle of a new album or anything. He managed to leave behind a complete body of work.
Yep.
An amazing complete body of work that will be his legacy for all of rock and roll history.
Yeah.
So
just listen to YYZ a few times.
Yeah, that's his drum solo. Mm-hmm. Should not be possible with human hands, and yet he still does it. And played it live several times.
Yeah.
Without a hitch. So that's how good he was. So rest in peace, Neil. We miss you. Okay, so with that, it is now time to start the proper show proper. And we must start off with what's probably going to become a new semi-permanent segment, at least for as long as the Trump presidency lasts. World War III watch.
Yep.
All right. So, as everybody knows, last week, the U.S. had a drone strike in Iraq that killed and also the head of their Iran's intelligence agency during a diplomatic mission. As you can probably remember, nobody except some people, except the people in Trump's administration and their hardcore supporters, were very happy about that. It basically wrecked all of the goodwill we had been building up with Iran since the Obama administration. Pretty much all in one swoop. And the fallout hasn't stopped there. So, for example, this week, Iraq's parliament actually voted to remove U.S. troops from the country, but the U.S. will not be complying.
Iraq.
Yeah, as in Iraq. Because remember, the drone strike happened in Iraq.
Okay, yeah.
During a diplomatic mission.
Yeah.
On Soleimani's part. And so the people in Iraq are very, very angry. Especially because Iran and Iraq, they have a little history.
Just a wee bit.
Just a wee bit. You may remember back during the day when Iraq was under the rule of a gentleman named Saddam Hussein. Yeah, he went to war against Iran with our help. That famous picture of Saddam shaking hands with Rumsfeld. Mm-hmm. That's where that comes from. As for the actual parliament vote, apparently this was like all of the Shia members, but like the Sunni members did not attend there. I think this may have just been like I'm not sure what power this particular vote was supposed to have, but either way, get out. You don't need to be there anymore.
Yeah, they're basically saying that they're going to be sending in some new people in just to, at the very least, see about figuring out how to get people out safely.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we don't know exactly if they're going to actually go through with that. It seems like still things could happen. To throw those plans into the trash.
Mm-hmm. And more fallout is, you know, that nuclear deal we had been working up towards with Iran?
Yeah.
The one that they actually kept obeying even after it expired?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've announced that they're through with that.
Yeah, geez, huge surprise.
Yeah.
Not so much that Iran would do this, but that Trump essentially pushed them to do this.
Yeah.
Since he's been running, he's been very antagonistic about the deal,
mm-hmm.
using any conspiracy information to push the notion that they were not following through with their end,
mm-hmm.
which every other member of the deal was basically saying, yeah, they're doing enough.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. And now they're just like, yeah, fuck it, we're out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah. All right, you could have kept this deal going for, you know, the foreseeable future for Trump, or you essentially forced him to cancel it outright and be able to start up right now.
Yeah. Also, by the way, because I've been hearing people bring this up, we did not just straight up just ship like $1 billion of our money and just hand it over to the Iran. That was the money that we had, the assets from Iran that we had frozen. Part of this nuclear deal, the terms was that we would unfreeze those assets and give them back to Iran.
Yeah.
So don't fall for that bullshit.
That's more Trump bullshit.
Yeah.
Fallout then kept going because Iran then decided they were going to fire missiles at some of our bases in Baghdad. Nobody was hurt, fortunately, and I think that's because the Iranians actually warned them ahead of time. Because this is actually something that not just Iran, but a lot of the places down there do fairly regularly. So, you know, everybody was worried, but no, everything's fine. And it actually doesn't look like the damage was that bad. It was very coordinated, and it basically just wrecked like a few buildings.
And it seemed very much like they were doing it to be mm-hmm. kind of ceremonial about it.
Yeah.
Not really intending to hurt people, but to say, hey, we can still do this shit.
Yeah.
If you guys want to do it.
And while that was happening, a flight from the Ukraine that was flying over, was it over Iran or over Iraq?
Iran.
Yeah, it was over Iran. It crashed and killed everyone on board, including a few Canadian citizens.
Yeah, I think it was about 60 Canadian citizens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to see if they had the
specific
numbers. 63.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As you can imagine, Premier Trudeau is not happy.
And they're pretty sure that it was Iran that shut it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably by accident. But yeah.
So it doesn't help things.
Yeah, apparently there's like some kind of footage somewhere that shows something that looks like a missile hitting the plane.
Yeah.
Apparently the Iranians are still holding on to the black box at the moment.
That doesn't seem suspicious at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, they're like, yeah, we screwed up. So yeah, that's World War III watch.
Yeah. We've been seeing a lot of really stupid shit coming out of Republicans over the past week. Generally, if you've seen probably like Nikki Haley saying Democrats are supporting the terrorists and that kind of shit.
And Warren Soleimani. And like, Representative Collins from my state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically sticking their heads up their own asses.
Mm-hmm.
Seen a lot of stuff like Republicans suggesting that anybody that's critical of the initial assassination should move to Iran. Like all that sort of stuff. Like really stupid stuff. It's like, no, you should look at your constitution, the First Amendment there.
Yeah. It
says freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
It's built in that we should be critical of the government.
Yeah. When all of this was going on, did anybody suddenly have any flashbacks to 2003?
Yeah, especially the way they're trying to manufacture any evidence they can to give them probable cause.
And it looks like they've failed so far.
And
because
the
people involved that are making up this information are so incompetent at it.
Yeah.
So I think during Trump's speech, he was suggesting that the Obama administration funded Iran, nuclear program.
Yeah, like I said, talking about that money, like I said, that was Iran's money to begin with. It was their assets that the Reagan administration froze back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I think Trump and some others in the Republican Party have been threatening to commit war crimes to destroy cultural sites.
They pretty much walked that one back like within 24 hours.
Yeah. Still, that's their first instinct is to commit war crimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a surprise.
When Tucker Carlson, of all people, actually speaks out against you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
I almost put that on
up
here, like somehow we were agreeing with Tucker Carlson in 2020.
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on?
And then he immediately destroyed any of that goodwill by talking about Anchor Babies the next day.
I mean, it wasn't going to last for long.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's still Tucker Carlson.
Just enough to be like, what the fuck is 2020?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway. So, with that out of the way, we got the rest. Next story, unfortunately, this one, I think these hit, was this around Wednesday, I think?
I think so.
A series of earthquakes hit the southern end of Puerto Rico. Specifically, two districts that are like at the, not quite at the southern point, but just to the west of it. So it wasn't the whole island, fortunately.
Yeah. That island has not had a good couple of years.
No, Puerto Rico is still recovering from the shit they went through back in 2017. So, yeah.
Yeah, they just got hit with a bunch of earthquakes in quick succession that did a lot of damage. I think about 2,000 people have been displaced. Still a bunch don't have electricity. Fortunately, the death toll is only at one person right now. It could have been worse. But yeah. Actually, working in Puerto Rico right now is Jose Andres with his World Central Kitchen about the people that have been displaced and all that.
Yeah.
So at least somebody's doing good this week.
Yeah. And next up, the final votes for the EU Brexit deal finally came through this week. It was approved. So it looks like Brexit is actually a done deal now.
Okay, then. Good luck over there.
Yeah, I hope y'all are going to be happy with that. Mm. Yeah, UK's been making some boneheaded decisions lately. I don't know if y'all heard this week, but there was apparently at some point, the UK, the government was thinking of commemorating the Royal Irish Constabulary. Guess who wouldn't like that? The Irish. And so what ended up happening is after the news, it was rescinded. Guess what ended up topping the pop charts in both Ireland and in Great Britain? Come out your black and tans. The old Irish rebel song.
Oh, dear.
Yep. And not just by anyone either. It was the version by the Wolftones, which is especially... that's especially significant because those guys have been singing them Irish rebel songs in front of crowds for a good 45 years now. Mm. Oh, yeah. That's... Oh, no, the Troubles aren't going to start up again. Of course not. Oh, boy.
What a world we live in. Just weird.
Everything old is new again.
Yeah.
Anyway, next up, we got some news on the impeachment. Just the one piece that we actually had for this week. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, announced that she's expecting to release the hold on the articles of impeachment soon. Probably, from what other sources I've said, it's probably going to be next week.
Yeah. Hurry up.
There's a reason why she's keeping a hold of them.
Hmm.
The reason is because she wants assurance from the Senate that they're going to have an actual fair and impartial trial. And if you remember who's currently head of the Senate...
Yeah, who announced he already had the votes to start trial.
Yeah.
Without witnesses and all that settled.
Yeah.
But that's not how this works. Point that out.
Mm-hmm. As a side note, John Bolton announced that he was willing to testify at the Senate hearing. I mean, at the trial. And then the Trump administration said, no, you can't do that.
Actually,
in fact, yes, he can. There's not a damn thing they can do to stop him. But yeah, that's news for that. And also, we got news from the Democratic presidential race for 2020. Marianne Williamson officially dropped out this week. I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner.
Yeah, she's basically saying... with caucuses and primaries now about to begin, however, we will not be able to garner enough votes in the election to elevate our conversation any more than it is now. The primaries might be tightly contested among the top contenders, and I don't want to get in the way of a progressive candidate winning any of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah, Marianne, I'm sorry, but you're just too hippy-dippy for the rest of us.
Mm. Yeah, she says at the end, whichever one of you wins the nomination, I will be there with all my energy and in full support.
God damn it. Would it surprise you that she was a graduate of a Waldorf school?
No,
I was about to say, man, I could probably hang with her for a bit. Kill her, but hang with her.
Hang with her and then hang her.
Revive her so I can have fun next weekend.
Talk about dwarves and crystals.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, yeah, and how your soul leaves your head before you're 7 if you don't wear a hat and it's cold.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake, I'm not even kidding you guys.
No, she is not kidding. Waldorf schools are freaking insane.
Mm. Yep.
There's some good parts to it, but it's also insane.
Yeah.
Okay, and now we got a bit of a blast of the past. So, Nick Sandman. You may know him as the smiling little shit that, was on CNN when that Native American gentleman was beating his little drum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you may remember that his wealthy parents filed suit against CNN.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they settled that suit this week.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pretty much set for life now.
Oh, fuck.
He was probably already set, but it's just
now he's set flaunting
their richness.
Yeah.
Because they initially sought $800 million in three lawsuits against CNN, Washington Post, and NBC Universal.
Mm-hmm.
Trial dates are not set for the other two, but they settled this one with CNN. Probably as a matter of like, just get this fucking shit out of here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's definitely sort of thing that only rich people could do this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go toe-to-toe with big media corporations and actually get to a point where they could settle.
Yeah.
Outlier also kind of shows lawyers. That CNN is a little bit on the spineless side because they didn't want to go through with the trial.
Oh, you just now discovered that?
No, yeah. Just pointing it out.
I will say this much. If Ted Turner was still the head of that network, he would not be hearing the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he die last week or something?
Mm. Ted Turner?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's still very much alive.
Mm. Okay.
Insane, but alive.
Mm.
Yeah, he's still alive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it seems like they've got other suits they're still working on.
Mm-hmm.
They're planning to sue Nathan Phillips. Mm-hmm. Native American man from the video.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's gonna
for $5 million.
Yeah, that is. You're gonna lose that one, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And they also plan to sue Gannett, the owners of the Inquirer.
Mm-hmm.
Inquirer. So they'll be bringing that to the judge in the next 60 days. So they're deciding to exploit their. Their status as the victims of the whole thing for as much money as they can get, which is a very rich white person thing to do.
Yeah. Professional victims.
Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up. So you guys may know now that now in a bunch of states and our neighbor to the north, marijuana is now legal. And available for sale and consumption.
You're fucking straight it is.
Yeah. And it's just great.
Mm.
It really is.
Mm.
Hopefully that'll be happening here in Georgia very soon.
Mm.
Oh, really?
No, it won't.
Oh, I was going to say, man, you guys must have gotten super fucking progressive.
No, I have to remind people that we are a state that did not allow legally allow selling alcohol on Sundays until 2017.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
But, so Texas is actually not one of those states.
No. But they probably grow a lot of shit.
They grow all of it. However, hemp actually is legal there, or a very specific kind of hemp. Problem is, though, is that the hemp is so convoluted and confusing and vague. That they caught a man, they got a man with like a truckload of this legal hemp and ended up jailing him for about a month.
Yeah. He had 3,350 pounds of it. So the Texas Department of Public Safety trooper arrested a driver, who claimed that they were hauling more than a ton of marijuana, near Amarillo. His name was Anudi Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
Was jailed for over just about a month,
mm-hmm.
Especially over Christmas. He was just released from jail last week. His case was dismissed and cargo is expected to be returned. Because there, let's see, state lawmakers narrowed the definition of marijuana from the cannabis plant to cannabis with more than 0.3% THC in it.
Mm-hmm.
Any cannabis with less than that is considered hemp. She's in products like clothing, twine, protein powder, and CBD oil.
Mm-hmm.
But he got pulled over, showed the trooper a lab report indicating the cargo met the state's new legal definition of hemp, and then was arrested.
Because he was brown.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, the police and all that are not properly trained to deal with this sort of thing. Because even then he, you know, would not respect the report or any of that. Just said it smelled like weed, which of course it does.
Yeah. The hemp smells like ass, man.
Hemp smells like weed because it is weed.
Yeah.
It's just not potent enough.
No.
Yeah. And yeah, they are going to, I believe they're going to be suing.
Fuck yeah.
His attorney argued that showing the lab report of legal THC levels took away the probable cause for arresting him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a white guy that showed him a lab report,
yeah,
mm-hmm. wouldn't have been an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see.
Good for that attorney for going at that angle. That's smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Texas officials are still in the process of creating regulations for hemp transportation and farming because this law is so new. Yeah, cops are having to like play this weird game of trying to figure out what is and what isn't marijuana and hemp.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. In their day to day, which, you know, means it's a really great idea to get this law passed
without framing anybody. Yeah, that's
mm-hmm. and without the a great idea. The support needed to make sure everybody understands what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, that's Texas for you.
Yeah.
At the same time, I can kind of see the officer's point of view there.
Yeah.
A lab report could have potentially been faked. Maybe err on the side of caution and maybe keep some stuff off the street. But
yeah,
it's, you know, it's a stretch a little bit.
Yeah. At least take the few minutes to verify it.
Yeah.
You know, call the company that, you know, does these reports, make sure it's real and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But they probably don't have
that infrastructure,
the training, in place to deal with that. But yeah, December 6th, he was driving a rental truck on Interstate 40 east of Amarillo when he was pulled over for driving on the shoulder. The DPS trooper, smelling what he thought was marijuana, searched the cargo hold and found thousands of pounds of green leafy substance in boxes and black trash bags. Yep. The marijuana / hemp industry is going to have to find a way to actually transport things in a manner that doesn't shows they should be taken serious. Seriously.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, we have these leftover Amazon boxes and trash bags. We put this stuff in. Like, put it in plastic bins.
Yeah.
Like, show that you're a legit business and not something super sketchy. Because this guy was just transporting. He said he was paid $2,500 to transport hemp from California farm to New York company. I don't know how you go through Texas on that.
You do, to avoid some of the mountains.
Yeah. But now it's like, okay, maybe avoid Texas if you can.
Yeah.
Go through the top part, maybe.
Shit, man, $2,500 for a cross haul like that? You'd think you'd get more.
Yeah,
that's not a lot.
It really isn't.
Probably also because of the threat of this kind of thing happening.
Well, otherwise he probably would have gotten less. I mean, but $2,500.
I mean, he spent a month in jail. So now the money's definitely not worth it.
Yep.
Well, yeah, because like, did he? You know, was he late on his rent? Did all of his shit get repossessed? You know, what happened to this guy? What happened to his fucking life while it was on hold for a month?
So he had already been arrested in Arizona during this trip. Spent the night in jail there. His lawyer said was released the next day with his cargo. When Arizona officials determined it was legal hemp, and Texas spent nearly a month in the Randall County Jail in custody of the U.S. Marshals Service. So he spent Christmas in jail away from his family and kids.
Suck. God.
Yep. Texas.
And luckily, they actually determined it wasn't, because he would have been jailed on federal drug trafficking charges that could have had him in prison for life.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty easily, it seems.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
All right. And speaking of assholes and gov in Texas.
Oh, no.
Governor Abbott announced that Texas will no longer accept resettlement of new refugees.
Yeah, first state in the country to take this option. Meanwhile, there are 42 other governors that have said they're going to be taking more on.
Do they not remember where they came from?
No. No, of course not. They don't.
Not Texas.
No, they
Texas
do not.
Was part of Mexico, for fuck's sakes.
Not Texas just Texas, but everything Mexico. West of the Rio Grande was part of Mexico.
It still is Mexico. They just don't fucking want to admit it.
That's the white privilege talking right there. Mm-hmm. Like, this is our land now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm,
anyway. Greg Abbott's an asshole.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, all right, that's the end of the serious portion of the show, thank God.
Yeah.
Now we get to the fun parts. And first, we're going to talk about some of the things that we saw at the things that were seen at the Consumer Electronics Show this year.
Oh, yes.
And, yes, and first and foremost, Charmin. Yeah, Charmin. That Charmin. The people who, with the toilet tissue, that people? Yeah. They, have a weird... they got a lot of weird, shall we call it, toilet tech.
It's a toilet paper robot that you summon when you run out of toilet paper.
You know what? If your life is that fucking complicated...
I could see this being great at, like, a workplace where they're like, oh, this toilet paper, shit, give me the good stuff.
Ain't nobody at work popping for Charmin, man.
No. I'm sure it's compatible with other rules. Yeah. You see, the immediate problem that I see is that you still have to remember to stock the Charmin robot.
Yeah.
You're going to summon it at one point, and it's just going to come to the toilet, and it's empty. Like, God damn it. A solution to a problem that is, well, yeah.
Just adding another problem on top of it.
Yeah.
God damn.
All right. It's just...
Okay. And I love that the presenters over at CES from Charmin were, like, doing this completely with a straight face.
Yeah.
Because it's their job. They make toilet paper. This is completely normal to them. All right.
All right. Well, next CES story, and once again, proof that Japan really is taking all of their idea cues from anime. Toyota has announced that they're going to be building a smart city at the base of Mount Fuji for the testing of AI and robots.
Can I go live there?
Yeah, I'd like to try that.
Yeah.
Do they have robot cats that don't eat your food while you're trying to eat it? Because I would
probably
go live
working
there.
On them.
Mm-hmm.
I would go live there for a week. That'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is going to be a 2,000 person city of the future,
mm-hmm.
Is what they're calling it, where they'll test autonomous vehicles, smart technology, and robot assisted living.
Mm.
It's being called right now Woven City. They're going to start working, they're going to break ground next year. The foothills mm-hmm. of Mount Fuji, about 60 miles away from Tokyo.
Mm hmm.
Yeah, they're describing it as a living laboratory that will allow researchers, scientists, and engineers to test emerging technology in a real-life environment.
Mm.
Yeah, set across a 175-acre site that was previously home to a Toyota factory.
Did you say a haunted Toyota factory?
No, just a regular one.
Mm. Okay.
A haunted Toyota factory. What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, that's great. Mm. Lots of headlines.
But yeah, they're going to have... Only fully autonomous and zero-emission cars will be permitted to operate on its streets. A fleet of self-driving vehicles known as Toyota e-Pallets will be used for delivery and retail purposes. The first residents will be the firm's employees and their families, as well as retirees, retailers, researchers, and other project partners. They're going to be partnering with Danish architecture firm Bjark Ingels Group,
mm-hmm.
a.k.a. BIG.
Mm.
I was designing the city's master planned. Buildings will be primarily made from wood, partly constructed using robotics. Designs also looked at Japan's past for inspiration. So a lot of that kind of feudal Japan kind of looking rooftops and such.
Yeah, this is straight up the plot to a certain magical index. The whole, like, building a smart city that can be used to develop and test new technologies and AI.
Yeah.
That is literally the setting for a certain magical index.
And we know what happens during this episode.
Yeah, magic comes back.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Let's look into that and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, there are other things that will show up at the Consumer Electronics Show, including concept cars.
Mm.
So Sony, for example, revealed an EV concept car called the Vision S.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they partner with a bunch of different companies for parts of this.
Mm-hmm.
Has 33 different sensors inside and outside the car, multiple widescreen displays, 360 audio, always-on connectivity, and some pieces coming from companies like BlackBerry and Bosch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also it's powered by a newly designed EV platform,
mm-hmm.
Which has been engineered by automotive supplier Magna. It'll be able to power other vehicle types like SUVs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it looks really nice.
It is a fully electric car, too.
Yeah, completely electric.
So now if they can find a way to get this technology so that it is affordable, that you can get in an everyday car.
Well, the more of these experiments that you do, the more the price ends up coming down because you learn a lot from it.
So we might see the... We might actually see the extinction of the gas station in our lifetime.
Or us.
One way or another.
Mm-hmm. It can't happen any sooner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What is 7-Eleven going to do for business?
7-Eleven is just fine without gas because we don't have gas for 7-Eleven here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how quickly gas stations start taking on electric charging stations.
I think mm-hmm. that's actually what's going to happen is they're going to start pulling up the gas tanks and replacing them with electronic charging stations.
Yeah, because, you already got prime locations and they're all over the place. So.
I mean, a lot of these gas stations have already started installing electronic charging stations already.
Some places throughout the country
Not the ones I've seen, but...
No, they're all
I think a
like
lot of
it.
The places that are charging stations here are like... lots.
Yeah.
A lot of dealerships have them too.
Oh, no, they're like at Best Buy and other stores like that here.
Mm. Yeah. Not here from what I've seen.
Well, that's probably for the geek squad.
No, probably not. But it's like IKEA has it and stuff. It's where you were going to go into like a restaurant or a shop and be there for like maybe, an hour or so.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a pretty good charge.
Yeah, malls are dying out. Put EV mm-hmm. stations in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey. Take the old malls, turn them into community centers, man.
It's kind of going that way, a little bit. A lot of it is turning mixed use here.
Mm-hmm.
They're building, don't get me wrong. One of ours.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed malls in their heyday, but mm-hmm. time's moved on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a different world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's not our fault that the guys who designed these things designed them to basically be black holes of money. Anyway, and amongst other things at the Consumer Electronics Show they got this year, a flying taxi. And no, we don't mean a flying car.
Mm-hmm.
Not a flying car.
Mm.
It's basically a quadricopter.
Yeah, it's...
Well, I've been asking Amazon to deliver shit to my balcony for like 4 years now.
Yeah.
Are we getting there?
It's going to happen sooner or later.
Okay. I want to put a little homing launch pad right there, and they can bring me my shit.
They'll just fire it at 40 miles an hour at the window.
Probably true.
Might have to leave the window open just to be sure.
You're just going to have to build a big net in place of that window.
Right. Cats mm-hmm. are sitting there in their cat tree, and all of a sudden, here comes my new socks and Mach 5.
But yeah, if you look at this, it's legit, like straight up like a quadricopter. It's I mean, even the body looks like one.
Yeah, but you're
right. Yeah, and I think is it AI controlled? I think.
Let's see. As a human pilot. We'll be flying it early on until they can finalize the software to
that makes sense.
Autonomous control.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Hmm.
And it'll be a 4-seat ride.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be ready about the first actual prototype. Will be ready in 2023.
Yeah, still
so it'll still
enough.
Be a while yet.
Hmm.
All right. And finally, it's finally here, folks. Samsung revealed... a personal robot. a little rolling AI called Bolly.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Yeah, it's not quite BB-8, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
It's it's basically like a little yellow tennis ball that rolls around, and yeah, there's this one picture they got here on Google of Bolly with like a dog in the background.
Mm.
And yeah.
Okay, this is not the one I was thinking of. I was thinking of the Liku, which is just creepy as fuck. This one is actually not horrifying.
No. No. Yeah. But
you got this little ball that's going to learn everything about you, steal all your information, and sell it off for the highest prices.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's cute.
Yeah. And one day it'll grow legs, and then we'll be in that movie Runaways.
Yeah.
The one with Tom Selleck and Gene Simmons plays the villain.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Yeah, that was a Michael Crichton movie. Yeah.
I should just get Disney on board and make this a version of the BB-8.
Yeah.
They could totally do that.
I'd sell a lot more of them.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they've got remote control versions of BB-8 on the market already. You'd have to do is take the shell of that and put it around this, and...
There you go.
There you go. You got the hot toy for next Christmas.
But hey, now you're going to have people talking to a little ball that rolls around the floor. Instead of their dog or cat.
Not the weirdest thing I've seen people do, let's be honest.
All right, so that was everything we saw at the Consumer Electronics Show.
I like this trailer they're showing in here of a woman who's doing exercise, and all of a sudden it projects video of her onto the screen she's looking at, and it's like, you're not creepy at all.
Yeah. All right, so that was the Consumer Electronics Show for this year. And now up next. So, Netflix has this, film, on there. It's a comedy movie. It's basically about Jesus bringing home his boyfriend to meet the family.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's called The First Temptation of Christ.
Yeah. And, I'm pretty sure, like, this is made by a comedy group. And I think they're actually from Brazil.
Yeah.
Are they? Yeah. And if those of you who don't know, Brazil is really, really super Catholic.
Hmm.
I mean, there's a giant statue on the mountain
there.
Yeah,
no shit, right?
In Rio de Janeiro, yeah. Jair Bolsonaro is currently the head of that country.
Hmm.
So, as you can imagine, people in Brazil were not happy, so much so that a judge actually ruled that Netflix has to remove the movie from streaming, and then that was immediately shot down when Brazil's Supreme Court came back and said, no, they can keep the movie up there if they want.
Yep. They denied the idea that the movie was insulting to Christians. One cannot suppose that a humorous satire has the ability to weaken the values of the Christian faith, whose existence is traced back more than 2,000 years, and which is the belief of the majority of Brazilian citizens. Which is definitely a hell of a thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, is your faith in this religion so weak that a fucking movie kills it?
Yeah.
That's basically like, what he's saying.
Yeah. Because if that was the case, then Monty Python would be single-handedly responsible for killing Christianity as we know it.
God, that would be nice.
But yeah, I think meanwhile, Netflix did not really say anything.
Well, because they knew it was like, yeah, they can't do shit.
Well, I think this all happened so fast they didn't have any time to respond to any of it until afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have a Brazilian account that was just had words from the director of the show or the movie talking about it afterwards.
Yeah.
But yeah, because from the group Porta dos Fundos.
Mm.
Said it opposed any act of censorship, violence, illegality, and authoritarianism for their work.
Yeah, I should have talked to all the people who voted Jair Bolsonaro.
Yeah, they already got attacked. On Christmas Eve, the production company's headquarters in Rio de Janeiro were attacked with Molotov cocktails.
Yeah.
Luckily, nobody was hurt. But police said several men with their faces covered took part in the assault.
Mm. Speaking of Bolsonaro, he's been kind of quiet recently, hasn't he? Like, after that story came out that he had that fall in his bathroom, he's been keeping pretty silent.
Okay. Here's a weird part of that Molotov cocktail story. Police identified a man named Eduardo Fazzi as a suspect after analyzing security camera footage. He fled to Russia. So the federal police asked Interpol Tuesday to issue a red notice for Fazzi. So yeah, that's a heck of a thing. Go media from Brazil to Russia. It's like that's where your safe haven is.
Yeah. That's not a short flight.
No, it is not. All right. And next up, we got some Marvel news. Scott Derrickson has dropped out as director of the next Doctor Strange movie, Multiverse of Madness.
Odd.
Yep. Yeah, he said, Marvel and I have mutually agreed to part ways in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness due to creative differences. I'm thankful for our collaboration. We remain on as EP. So he's going to be still involved in some form, but they're going to find somebody else. I would guess he was probably trying to go too horror-y with that movie than what Disney wanted.
Could be.
Looks like the whole plot of it is supposed to be a bit scary, but also it's Disney.
Yeah.
They don't want things to be too scary.
No.
Because God forbid there be an MCU movie that isn't kid-friendly in form.
Yeah.
You got Deadpool, but it's...
I would say that's not Disney, but it actually is now.
Yeah. Anyway, and next up, because he's already ruined Fox, Seth MacFarlane has announced that he's moving to NBC Universal after a huge deal.
Yeah, he's getting 5 years, $200 million about, to move over to NBC Universal.
Yeah.
But yeah, under the deal, he and his Fuzzy Door Productions will develop television projects for both internal and external networks, including Peacock.
Hey, I just want the next season of The Orville. That's all I care about.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, but I have a feeling it's going to be more of the same that we've except from Seth, because he's got a formula and he exploits the hell out of it.
It seems like The Orville is moving from Fox to Hulu for its third season.
Coming up sometime later.
Which is a thing that a lot of Fox TV shows are doing now.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be talking about a new show that FX is doing. And they are moving a bunch of their stuff to a thing they're calling FX on Hulu. Which means it's FX, but it's not on TV. And it's confusing people a lot.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, which shows are ones that are going to be on the TV? Which ones are only on the service? Which ones are on FXX?
I need a spreadsheet to keep everything straight now.
With Disney and the Fox stuff. Which of these is on Disney Plus? Which one's on Hulu? Which one's on Disney Plus but gets taken down? Because they've already had stuff get taken down from Disney Plus.
Yeah.
A few months in, it's like...
Already?
All right, we know you're Disney, but you can't be this Disney right now. You gotta at least settle down here. Also, they have deals they've made with companies, and now they're regretting some of them.
Yeah, so next up, we got a trailer for the New Mutants. And, wow, it looks good.
Yeah, speaking of horror stuff that is technically a part of Disney now, this looks pretty neat.
Yeah, definitely a different direction than I've seen.
Yeah, it's going to be out April 3rd. Director is Josh Boone. I'm not sure what he's worked on before. Let's see. Oh, he did The Pretenders. He was a writer on... I directed The Fault in Our Stars and Stuck in Love, which is a hell of a departure from that. Also working on The Stand. It's an upcoming American drama television miniseries. Based on the novel of the same name by Stephen King.
Oh boy, we're getting another adaptation of Stand.
Yeah.
It's going to be on CBS All Access, America's most popular streaming service.
Except for all the other ones that are more popular than that.
Oh, wait, what? Yeah. And the thing people reluctantly subscribe to get their Star Trek fix?
Pretty much. Mm-hmm.
For the month they need it to watch everything.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, and then next up, we've got the trailer for a new show called Devs, which is written and directed by Alex Garland. You may know him as the writer and director of Ex Machina and Annihilation. He also wrote the Judge Dredd movie. Not the first one, the other one.
Hmm.
The good one.
Yeah. And it's going to be exclusive to FX on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
Starting March 5th. And it looks very much like a show from that guy.
Oh, yeah. He has
a style.
Yeah.
Also, it features Nick Offerman.
Mm-hmm.
Where they said, no, you don't have to shave your beard. And he's like, all right.
Yeah.
He has long hair and the full beard. And he looks very Nick Offerman-y.
Mm-hmm. All right. And finally, last show of the night, and probably one I'm most excited for, Netflix released a trailer for Lock and Key.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yep, season one starts February 7th.
So yeah, so Lock and Key. Lock and Key is a graphic novel series that is written by Joseph Hillstrom King, a.k.a. Joe Hill.
Mm-hmm.
If that name sounds familiar, yes, he is Stephen King's son.
Mm-hmm.
And he is as talented as his dad, if not quite as prolific. And basically, it is, well, where to begin, really?
Summary of what it's about, I guess, would be
good. Yeah, basically, it's about this family who move into an old house after their dad was murdered. They move to this old house that has, like, a bunch of, like, random doors everywhere, and that have, like, these weird markings on them. And then as they explore the house, they start finding all of these keys everywhere that suddenly give them all these weird powers, like, you know, the ability to fly, the ability to turn invisible. One of them is having the ability to basically sort of open up your head in a cartoonish manner and see, like, a symbolic representation of your history and your past and your personality. It makes sense if you actually see it.
All right.
Yeah, it's weird as all hell, and it's amazing.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'll give it a look.
Yeah.
Trailer looks good.
Oh, yeah. And there we go, folks. That's it. I do believe we got ourselves a show for the night. Yes, we do. All right. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you have a question, comment, or something you would like us to read on the air, you can get us in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got a link for you in the show notes. I don't know why I couldn't get it out of my mouth there. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, wait a little while. We'll be there soon. We won't rest until we're on all of them. And so, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Filippo D'Onofo, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Loach, good night, sleep tight. April cannot get here fast enough. Good God, I need my freaking Cyberpunk 2077 fixed.